Welcome to the first episode of Freeland's Wrestling Rewind. Man, I gotta get used to saying that. My name is Mike Freeland. I am your host. I am your tour guide. I am your big brother. All of the above. I am here to take you on a journey down the road of what was the last 7 days in the wrestling world. We'll be talking about the things that really caught our attention and the things that made headlines. Now, before I go any further, I'm not on this by myself. I have got a dear, personal, longtime friend who's gonna be joining with me, and his name is Tony Cottam. Tony, come on in. Welcome to the Rewind, sir. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Much better for your voice and talking to all of our new friends that were bound to make on this journey.
Yeah, it's interesting because for some wrestling fans who had been a follower of Total Wrestling Magazine and Total Wrestling Writers Podcast, Tony and myself, Dara O'Connor, Marcus Green, a lot of guys that you are familiar with as far as journalists in the wrestling industry, joined me on that program. Well, we've decided to go ahead and take this show on the road, and we now have started a new show called Freeland's Wrestling Rewind. And at the very top of this program, Tony, I think there's one thing that you and I will both agree on 100%. We want to reach out to Mr. James Trupenny and thank him for giving us an opportunity to come ahead and join the network here and be a part of the Trupenny show family. And it's going to be very, very exciting.
Yeah, totally. We may have referred to several glorious leaders in the past on other podcasts, but there is only one true glorious leader. We all bow down at a shrine with his son, everyone.
And I tell you what, I know James Trupenny is listening to this somewhere with his professor jacket on. We've talked about this before. It's got the patches on the elbows. He's probably holding a cup of tea, and he is the czar when it comes to knowledge. With the bubble pipe, absolutely. But James, and all kidding around, you are a great guy, and I thank you for letting us join you in this journey into wrestling news. All right, so many things that there are to get into this week, but what Tony and I did in our pre-production meeting is we went ahead and we kind of whittled it down to some of the topics that we thought were most hard-hitting and gritty. Now, the one thing I definitely want to mention to you guys is there is this rumor, an innuendo, if you will, speculation, that there is a new professional wrestling company that is on the rise. Or it is in the workings, the laboratory. There's bubbles coming out. Now, we don't know if there's a lot of truth to this. We don't know if this is just speculation, but a lot of news outlets in the wrestling world have been carrying this. Chris Jericho, Jim Ross, the Young Bucks with a new wrestling promotion. Tony, tell me a little bit about what you've heard about this and what your thoughts are on if this could come to fruition.
Well, pretty much everyone else has said there was a story scoops that seems to be the gem of this story so far. So basically, the story's going on that Chris Jericho and Jim Ross are working with their agent Barry Bloom, who's a guy well known to the wrestling world. If you listen to podcast, he mentions him a lot during the early days of WCW, and he was connected to Foley for a long time as well. They work with him, and project is supposedly going to be bankrolled by Shahid Khan. Now, that's a name that's important in America and Britain for various different reasons, most of them due to sports. He owns the Jacksonville Jaguars in the NFL, he owns Fulham FC in the English Premier League. He's just had a bid for Wembley withdrawn. He was going to buy Wembley Stadium after FA enough, but that fell through for various different reasons, not which had anything to do with money. It was all about the direction of the stadium. But this man has money to burn, and money it's all about, and seeming to genuinely enjoy sport. If he's behind it, then I think he can pay for it. From what we've been told, Jericho, the Young Bucks, Cody Rhodes and Hangman Page are already been sent out to be on the roster of this new one. Kenny Omega States has said to be understood in the past that if the league goes somewhere, they'll go as a group. So his contract, as with most New Japan, so this is something that might tip the balance of New Japan or WWE. This is incredibly interesting, just the whole concept of a new wrestling promotion coming in, and they've apparently going to lose money in the early years. This is long term. This isn't just a short money grab like some of these promotions have been. Jericho, if you've been reading between the lines of what Jericho's been saying recently, he's becoming more modern with WWE. I think Vince in general, he's not as WWE as he once was. The appearance of All In was a prime example of that. So if Jericho's involved, he's got one of the best minds in the wrestling business at the moment. He might not be able to go in the ring to the exact same level that he wants, but the mind is still two steps ahead of almost everyone else in the business.
No, I agree with you on that one too, and I think it is interesting because, you know, we've talked about so many different wrestling promotions wanting to go ahead and launch, and what's the big thing that is the common denominator with all of them not being able to succeed? And that's finding a financial backer, somebody who is willing to go ahead and put money into a promotion and be willing to be patient with it, because like you said, Tony, they are going to lose money. That's not an if, that's not a maybe, that's a yes, because at the end of the day, when it comes to something like a professional wrestling company, you got to take time to garner an audience. You got to take time to go ahead and establish who your audience is going to be. And let's be honest here. I mean, you got Ring of Honor out there. You've got New Japan. You've got the WWE. You've got Impact Wrestling. You have got Guerrilla Pro Wrestling. You've got a lot of companies out there right now that are really got their foot in their market, in their niche. So I think the one thing that they're going to have to do, if this is true, is they're going to have to go ahead and say, all right, how can we find an area of the market or a sector of the wrestling community that they're not doing this? Or they are doing this, but we know we could build upon that and make it better. I think bringing a Jim Ross in is an incredibly smart idea. Like we've said so many times before on other programs, Tony, the big thing is the creative minds behind a company. Impact Wrestling / TNA had probably one of the greatest rosters we've ever seen as far as talent, but they didn't have the minds for it. They didn't have the business acumen for it. You had a Vince Russo that was in charge of it. And I'm not disparaging against Vince, but he should never been in that capacity. And then you had somebody like Dixie Carter, which she was a fan of wrestling. I get that. But she did not have the business acumen that could run a professional wrestling company. So get the business plan in stage first, then go ahead and start building your roster. Would you agree that that's probably what this company is looking to do first before they make any announcements on any potential names?
I would say that's a definite thing. That's a very good point you're making. The Impact Wrestling or TNA of the past roster, they were incredible, but they didn't have the support behind them. Now, this is going to be an ongoing theme if you're just a new listener to this podcast. I listen to almost every wrestling podcast out there because I have zero life. And on this week's Vince Russo Truth with Consequence podcast, he dropped a little gem that I thought was kind of buried and not a lot of people picked up on. That just before Hogan and Bischoff came into TNA, while Russo was there, there was talks to bring in Jim Ross as not an on-screen character, but as a general manager behind the scenes, as a talent relations officer, as a creative guy. That would have made a huge difference to TNA. If he's going to be on board in this so-called new promotion, we don't even have a name for it yet, but if he's going to be on board in that capacity, that is a huge piece of the puzzle right away. He did that job as well as anyone ever has done. If you look at the roster that he had in the WWE that he signed and he brought in from Ohio Valley Wrestling, you know, that's an incredible CV just to have right there. If he's going to commentate, great. You've got one of the most recognizable voices in history, but it's the mind behind the scenes that's more important in this case, I think.
No, I agree 100%. Once again, I think that a lot of promotions nowadays, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Tony, but I think they're looking at history. And you know what? If you don't respect history, you're bound to repeat it. And I think companies nowadays are looking at what did not work, what did work, and then they're trying to find out what is that nice, delicate balance between the two, and then what can we kind of add in with our own flavor so it doesn't look like we're just trying to mimic something someone else has already done. Because you know what? We've learned this as well with Impact TNA. The big thing here is copycatting is not something wrestling fans like. They look at it and they go, oh, I see where you got that concept. I see why you're doing that. And at the end of the day, you know what? You don't want to be known as a WWE light company.
Nobody these days is going to top the WWE. I think that's established. They're just a global money-making machine. If you're quite happy to aim to be number two or a solid number three and make a profit, then there's a whole new market there for that.
Let me ask you this question also in regards to professional wrestling promotions as well. You know, we often talk about the scale and everything in life. We're saying, well, this person's number one, this one's two, this one's three. But let's think about this, though. Let's really think about this. What really justifies one being number one being number two, and one being number three? I think you can look at it from a profit standpoint. Obviously, that's a very easy metric to use, and then you can look at it from TV ratings and whatnot. But let me ask you this question. When it comes to what is best and who is top dog, we learned really, really quickly that that's just like having a conversation with your friends. What's your favorite restaurant or what's the best restaurant? You know what? Everyone's going to have their own choice on who's number one. So when it comes to who's best in wrestling, that's not necessarily just based upon who brings in the most amount of money and who has the biggest stars. Would you agree?
Totally. I mean, from money point of view, obviously WWE far and away number one, but from an in-ring point of view, I don't think there's anyone on the planet who's got even passing interest in wrestling that's looked at New Japan in the past couple of years and said they are far and away the best in-ring product on the planet. WWE might not even be in the top five for that conversation, but it doesn't matter because they've built a brand, they've built a platform, they've built an audience and a devoted audience at that. So like you say, it's all about opinions. This is what makes wrestling so good. Five people can watch the same match and five people can have totally different opinions about whether that's a great match or not. Five people could have exactly the same opinion. It doesn't make any difference to the match. It's still being presented as this sporting entertainment, predetermined, whatever you want to call it, competition. It's all about putting the product out there and just entertaining people. At the end of the day, these guys go out in the ring, they put their body on the line, and all they want to do is entertain people. I was, just to go off on a sidetrack, I was at a local show on Thursday night run by Kid Fight called Premier British Wrestling, and it was in front of maybe 200 people at most, more likely 175. And I've had more fun there than I've had at a lot of bigger shows, and it's all because the guys in the ring go out and they just want to entertain people. And they did that. They entertained people from like 6-year-old kids all the way up to grandparents and stuff. And this is, to me, this is what wrestling's about. It's not about going out there and having Dave Meltzer explode over a 7-star match because it was in Tokyo. It's about going out, enjoying yourself, and entertaining other people and bringing people together.
Well, at the end of the day, if you don't have a fan base and you don't take care of your fans and you don't appreciate your fans, you're not going to be in business for very long, because you know what? The one thing you don't insult is the acumen of the wrestling fan. Wrestling fans are very, very smart. Don't ever think that wrestling fans aren't smart, because just like any big buff fan that's into maybe a Harry Potter or a video game like Minecraft or anything like that, people know their stuff, and wrestling fans definitely know their stuff. And like you said before, it can be a smaller audience, but that intimate setting actually even enhances the product as well, because you feel like you are connecting with the performer as well. And if everybody's having a good time, like they've always said, they go home, they tell one person, that one person tells another person, that someone has a birthday party, they start talking about it, and that positive energy continues to grow. So once again, put on a good product, whether it's in front of 10,000 or 10 people, and you will definitely start to get the buzz. So Tony, I think we're just going to have to monitor this situation as it unfolds, find out what's going on. Now, there are some people that are saying that there is not a whole lot of credibility with this yet, and I don't know if they're just trying to shoot it down because, oh no, someone let the cat out of the bag. But there's a lot of things where Chris Jericho said, oh, on Twitter, I guess I'm starting a wrestling company. I guess I'm starting a car wash company. I guess I'm starting this. I'm starting that. But once again, that's just his wonderful personality that we've fallen in love with over the last 20 years. He is a genius at misdirection. So once again, stay tuned for this. Don't be surprised if something else is in the works for a new wrestling promotion. All right, before we get to our main topic this week, something I wanted to talk to you about, Tony, because I don't know, maybe I feel like I'm the only one who's been thinking about this, but I can't get my mind off of it. I mean, I'm literally just, I'm harping on it. Shawn Michaels. Okay. I understand. Tony, it's the hair. I'm sorry. Like, you've probably seen on social media where he got a haircut, right? He got rid of the long hair, and it was just nice. It was cleaned up. I thought it looked great. We'd seen him before with the trimmed up haircut when he was in the UK. I thought it looked great. I thought it looked good. It looked clean and polished. And I'm like, okay, great. He's going to come back like that. Well, here I am, dopey Mike Freeland, flipping the channels, watching wrestling. I see him with his signature trademark cowboy hat. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, that's cool. And then it came off. The cowboy hat came off, and this guy, he's Mr. Clean Part 2. And I don't know if this is supposed to be going along with the whole Triple H gimmick where they're both bald, but Shawn Michaels was known as the boy toy. He was known really as the sex symbol of the WWF for many, many years. And he would tease his hair, he would toss it around, he'd wear the long dangly earrings, he was in Playgirl magazine. And I get it, time happens and people age, and people, some people age better than others, let's be honest with you. But he got rid of the hair completely. Now, Tony, am I wrong? Am I in the minority with this, or is this hair thing really bothering people?
Well, I think we have to tip a hat towards the Troopany Show. If you're a regular listener to the Troopany Show, you know that they always talk about the excessive hair in New Japan. So I think we're going to fit in very well on this network here straight away. But yeah, the hair is such a bizarre thing, and he doesn't seem to be quite comfortable with it yet, because there was a spot on the Super Showdown, or as I call it after watching the main event, the Super Slowdown, where Michaels got bumped off the apron, fell onto the floor, and rolled towards the ring barrier, and his hat came off on the way down, and he actually slowed down his bump on the floor so he could grab the hat on the way down and have it back in his head before he hit the barrier at the side, just to cover that he was obviously bald. And it took me right out of the match, because like, for the rest of the match, I just kept watching the hat. I'm like, is the hat going to stay on? Is the hat going to come off? Is that hat on the balcony? Is this Super Bowl?
No, I'm with you. It feels like he's almost kind of embarrassed about it, because you also saw that unique 1980s headband he's got going on too, where it's like really thick in the front, and then it tails off in the back a little bit. This is just weird. This is just odd. And you know what's so interesting? You know, I love this, because so many people made fun of Hulk Hogan for so many years for being the bald-headed man with the mustache. But Hulk Hogan has literally kept his hair longer than Shawn Michaels has. And I find that just to be ironic, because Hogan was always knocked on as, oh God, look at the bald guy. Do you think it would be different if Hogan went completely bald versus Shawn Michaels going completely bald? Which one would probably be more understandable and more accepting? Your take.
Well, Hogan's been bald for years. Everyone's done it. It was, don't speak about it. Never, ever speak about it, which made the Russo shoot at Bash at the Beach 2000 such an epic thing when he finally called him a big bald son of a bitch, and the whole entire wrestling world went, oh, this is a shoot. I don't know. I genuinely can't ever imagine Hogan without the blonde hair coming out the bottom of the bandana or the baseball cap or whatever. I mean, can you really see Hulk Hogan being totally bald?
No, I can't. But then that really brings up a great conversation here, because we've seen wrestlers in the past go from having hair to not having hair. And one of them was The Rock. The Rock had that in the beginning when he was Rocky Maivia. I think they even referred to it on one of the WWE DVDs as his pineapple haircut, where it was like real spiky at the top. And then he kind of cleaned it up and it looked good. And then all of a sudden, when he came back, it was bald, which is fine, because he's like, like young and he's super athletic, which he pulls off that bald look. But not everybody pulls off the bald look well. Snitsky went ahead and got his hair shaved. That didn't look good at all. Then we found out that Kane really was bald, and it was kind of like, what the hell's going on with this?
You know, Angle had the hair match as well. He's looked much better shaving the head off.
He does look better being bald. So it's one of those situations where some guys it works for, some guys it doesn't. Let me ask you this question. Triple H, if you could snap your fingers right now and say Triple H with the long hair and the Fu Manchu or the beard or the handlebars, whatever you want to call it, or facial hair but bald, which one of those are you picking? Or to you, it does it not really matter?
But Triple H, I don't think it matters so much. Although, I mean, you have to go back to sort of the evolution days when he had the very long, very straight hair and he had the Lemmy, like you see the Fu Manchu going on, where it looked like he should be sitting in a chair dispensing wisdom to gremlins or something like this. The one that struck me more than anything was Kevin Nash. When he went grey, and then he sort of cut his hair really short, because 90% of Kevin Nash matches back in the day were flicking his hair, and yes, 75% of his injuries were caused by him flicking the hair.
That was one of his moves. Yeah, I don't know if I'm completely feeling this. It's one of those situations where I know we're supposed to accept that Father Time happens. I get that. But like, you know, even Kevin Nash had made the comment when they were back in TNA, I guess we're dying our hair again, or I guess we're not dying our hair again, when it came to him and Scott Hall. Like, guys, if you have gray hair, please dye it. If you are going bald, please, by all means, take whatever money you have left in your bank and make you look like what I expected you to look like 15 years ago. Because if you look anything different than that, it's going to be very difficult for me to stay focused, because I don't know what the hell I'm looking at this point. All right, so enough of the beauty tricks and the tips that we are giving out here. Let's get right to the nitty-gritty. Let's get to the main event of this week. And that is the biggest topic of conversation, not only with wrestling itself, but it seems like it's in the political world as well. A lot of people in Washington are talking about the WWE's relationship with Saudi Arabia, their 10-year contract they have to go ahead and produce shows over there. So the first show that they went ahead and they did, what was your thoughts? I mean, I know you had thought that, I thought it was just more of a glorified house show. Did you think that it was good, or did you think that it was once again just so-so?
Yeah, it really was a glorified house show, but if they're going to throw that amount of money at you, you know, it's Vince has a business to run, they have shareholders to answer to now. At the time, I totally got it. I understood what they were doing, I understood, you know, why they took the money. Wasn't entirely happy about it, because there's still the whole thing about, you know, the women weren't even allowed to go, let alone perform. But that's a whole other story. But yeah, the show itself was just, it was 4 hours of my life that I'll never get back, to be honest. The presentation looked great. I think it was 3 hours worth of them praising Saudi Arabia and saying how progressive it was and how fantastic it looked and how welcome we've been made. Yeah, that was a bit much.
Yeah, that stroking of their ego really probably did not look very good, because now, as we know, things change and perception isn't always reality, and we found out very, very quickly that things with the WWE and this Saudi Arabia situation have gone from bad to worse. So just to kind of bring everybody up to date on exactly what's going on, just in case you haven't followed this, there was a journalist from the Washington Post who obviously lived here in the United States. He was from the Middle East. He went back over there. From what I've been told, it was for marriage documents. Now, he had been very, very critical in his writings of the leadership over in Saudi Arabia. Now, I don't know. It doesn't take a brainchild to realize, you know what, if I'm going to be critical of somebody, I'm not going to be walking back in their backyard just because of the way that we have heard that they handle business. And then it was, well, he's disappeared. We have camera footage of him walking into the consulate, but we have no footage of him walking out. And officials had said, no, we have no idea. We had nothing to do with his disappearance. We have no idea his whereabouts. And everyone seemed to kind of accept that. As creepy and as nonsensical as that sounds, they did. Now, to you and I, and anyone else who's probably hearing my voice, you would probably stop and beg the question. Someone walked in, but they didn't walk out. Huh. Something's going on here, Scooby-Doo. I don't think this really smells right. Tony, let me ask you the question. If we're going back to the beginning of this timeline here, goes back on over, walks into the consulate, doesn't walk out. What's your initial thoughts just on phase one of this situation?
If someone goes into a building, unless the Julian Assange, they have to eventually come out.
You would think. I mean, unless they have a cape and they're going to jump out a window and fly. and to my knowledge, that hasn't happened before.
No, if you study the timeline, it's very sort of disturbing and more or less, I would say, clear cut. It's blindingly obvious what's going on. It's just who wants to admit it and who doesn't want to admit it and how much they want to admit. It's a very disturbing case because it basically does affect freedom of speech, which is something that the United States Constitution is very big on. So you'd think they would be all over this.
Yeah, the first part of this, it just didn't make any sense to me. And it was interesting because I think it was about a day or so after the news had actually broke, I thought, okay, well, something happened. This guy just doesn't disappear. You know, and I understand that different cultures and that different parts of the world handle things differently. And I think that's a big thing that I think we're now starting to realize more so in the United States that not everyone does things the U.S. way. And I think we have been so conditioned here in the United States to believe, oh, well, the way we do things, everyone does them that way. No, not so much. Not so much drinking the USA Kool-Aid. But the point is this, someone walks in, they don't walk back out. You gotta beg the question, where are they? Where are they? And the authorities over there had said, well, we have no idea where he is. I have no idea what had happened. And then there was this rumblings on the internet. There was some audio recordings that had been released that he had been interrogated, and it was an interrogation gone wrong. An interrogation gone wrong that led to what allegedly, and I'm going to use those words, was a dismemberment of his body. Now, I'm going to throw this out here before I go any further. An interrogation gone wrong. What are you interrogating him about? I don't know why authorities would be doing that. Second of all, an audio recording that allegedly exists. Once again, I haven't heard it, so I'm using the word allegedly. Him being dismembered. Okay. All right. And then the United States says, well, you know, we're going to be looking into this. We're not really quite sure what happened. We're going to take the officials on their word that they don't know where he is. And then recently it came out, well, wait a minute. There was a brawl. There was a fight. And he subsequently died. Okay. So first you deny it. Now you say there's an interrogation. There was the reports that came out. Then there were reports that there was some type of brawl or fight that happened in the consulate. But here's the other question, Tony. Where in the hell is this guy's body? If this guy died, then why is his family or somebody not notified? Why isn't his body being given back? So a proper funeral? It just doesn't all add up.
There was a very good piece on the John Oliver Show. I think it was either this week or last week, covering all of this. And there's a good timeline piece on the BBC website as well. So basically, it looks like at 3 in the morning, their time, a private jet carrying some of the suspected Saudi agents arrived at Istanbul Airport, and it's joined later on in the afternoon by another one. Mr. Khashoggi, I totally probably butchered that pronunciation, goes in there about 1 o'clock, and then both jets carrying all the suspects leave at 9 o'clock. Apparently, I'd heard that the guys on the planes were just trying to claim that they were just tourists. So I was like, yeah. We're going to have a tour of Istanbul. We're going to arrive at 3 o'clock in the morning, carrying a bone saw, and then we're going to leave by 9 o'clock, seeing everything we need to see. It was a fantastic visit. Yeah, something is very changing there. And obviously, I mean, interrogation, this is a very serious subject, so I mean, I don't want to make light of it, but obviously they're interrogating them about the events of the first greatest Royal Rumble. Did Brock Lesnar's feet or Roman Reigns' feet touch the ground first? That's obviously what the interrogation was.
Oh my God. I mean, like you said before, we laugh at it because if it wasn't so ridiculous, we would be crying because this is sad. And this is really sad. For whatever reason, there are some people that are buying into this concept that, oh, you know, we had no idea. Are you a fool? Are you a fool? You believe that guy just happened to go missing. And then you hear all this information, the stuff that Tony just went over, and somehow you still want to live in the world of, you know, deniability. It doesn't exist. Guys, this guy was murdered. That's it. And it really bothers me. It bothers me that there are some people out there who I even have interacted with on social media who buy into it. And there's people literally who say, well, you know what? I do think that Crown Jewel should still happen in Saudi Arabia because, you know, there's a lot of money that's been invested and the WWE has shareholders that they have to report to and et cetera, et cetera. Here's the deal, guys. Money can be replaced. Things can be done differently. You can't replace a human life. And it's not okay. It's not cool. It is not even – that really, really brings your scruples into question. And I think that this whole situation, if WWE doesn't completely distance themselves in every way, shape, and form from this, cut ties and move on, then they're going to be looked at much differently. Instead of being this now family company, family, you know, entertainment brand, they're going to be looked at in a very negative light, which is not going to be good, not only for their image, but for their bottom line as well. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, let's step aside from that horrific chain of events that I've just read out and totally ruined everyone's day, if you like. Listening to this first thing in the morning. From a purely wrestling standpoint, should they be over there after all this is going on? If it was any other company and this PR shitstorm, for want of a better word, is happening, you'd step the fuck back from it. Oh, sorry, step the hell back from it. Sorry, James. You would at least, you know, this would show would be postponed or cancelled, or there would be some logistic excuse. Remember back, was it WrestleMania 7 that was moved to the smaller arena for security concerns, not because it was tickets weren't selling? Make up some story like that. Vince McMahon's been doing this for years. Make up a story why they can't go. The money excuse? I've seen reports this morning saying if they skip this show, they'd lose $3 million at most. If they pull out of the shows for this year, they'd maybe lose $16 million for the fiscal year. That's pocket money to Vince McMahon. He's just been paying billions of dollars for his TV shows. He could find that down the back of the couch. He could lose that down the back of the couch and not worry about it. This is, for me, and I'm going to sound like I'm standing on a soapbox here, but if the WWE want to promote themselves as a bastion of family entertainment and do this peachy stuff and all the philanthropism that they're doing and present themselves as moulding the minds of future generations, going to Saudi Arabia to try and change minds, that is not a bad idea. That's not the worst idea. But embroiling yourself in all this and being associated with it and having it make mainstream press and mainstream media and reports about it, surely at some point the benefits of the money that you're getting paid, which is silly money for putting on these kind of things, surely that outweighs the damage that you're doing to not only your own image, but to your shareholders, to the general perception of what you're about. That, to me, that's the big thing here. I wouldn't want to be associated with that right now. In the future, who knows? This is a strange and crazy world we live in. I mean, let's not go down the whole political route right now. Your country, Mike, has its own problems. Our country has so many problems, it's unbelievable. This is happening the world over with the internet and social media and hashtag fake news being everywhere. There's so many avenues for you to make up your own minds about things. This is something that I think the WWE really morally have to step back from, and I don't understand why it hasn't happened. Well, actually, I do understand why it hasn't happened yet, and again, it comes back to why a lot of people don't want to believe, and it's the almighty dollar.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it seems like everything, Tony, revolves around money. And I understand money, they say, makes the world go round. Without money, then you're going to have total chaos and whatnot. But it seems like the more money you involve in a situation, you're going to have a lot of chaos. There's no answer to any situation. And I'm not saying just this one, but there's no answer that you can give to any situation. Just think about your life that you can give where everyone's going to be on board and say, oh yeah, I completely agree with that. There's always going to be those outliers. There's always going to be those people who say, well, think about this, or what about that? No, guys, someone's dead. Someone is dead because they wrote, or in my belief, this is just my personal belief, that they, you know, shared their opinions on maybe a political climate, and they're dead now. They're dead. And WWE, as of right now, is still wanting to be in business with someone with a regime that was allegedly associated with the death of someone. Can't have that, guys. Can't have that. Like, there's no way that you can spin this that says this is a good idea. Once again, everything we are talking about right now, we are saying that it is reported on. It is alleged. We don't know. It is just our sole opinions that something here happened to this poor guy. It's not okay. And WWE needs to rectify this. Now, speaking of rectifying this, I have been told, and I have seen this online as well, and I'm wondering if you've seen this as well, yeah, Tony, but yeah. WWE has postponed ticket sales for this event. Now, let me ask you this. Is that to be perceived as step one in the process of walking away from this? Or do you think this is, no, we're just going to stand pat because we want to find out if more information comes forward?
Well, they have said they're monitoring the situation. So, I mean, what can they do, really? Let's not start that dog debate. The tickets being postponed, I think they've been postponed to go on sale the actual day of the show, November 2nd. That doesn't mean anything. There's nobody that's flying from Melbourne, Australia, or from England, or from Ireland, or Canada, or America to see this show. Anyone at that show already lives in Saudi Arabia and could possibly be forced into the stadium if need be. We're back to sort of like the showdown in Korea show that WCW had, where people were forced to go. And I would imagine, well, I don't want to say I know, but you've got to think, if Saudi Arabia are putting this show on as a great example of how progressive they are, you've got to think they want the place to be sold out. So people would be going, whether they want to or not, or whether they would know what's going on or not. The tickets being postponed from a WWE point of view, maybe that's them saying, yeah, we're taking action, we're being proactive here. You're doing the equivalent of throwing a pebble into a pond and watching how far the ripples go.
Well, okay, let's just go ahead and let's spin this thing forward, okay? So let's take the angle of WWE decides to go ahead and not cancel the show, but just go ahead and move it to a different venue. Now, there's been wide reports that it could and most likely would occur somewhere in Europe and most likely maybe in Great Britain. Let me ask you this question. There are probably promoters and buildings that are absolutely ready and willing to take Vince's money to go ahead and do this show. If they decided to move the location. I don't foresee Vince having any difficulty with getting a building and selling tickets in anywhere in the UK. Would you agree with that?
No, totally. And it would be like just typical of how the UK has been treated for pay-per-views that we finally get one and it's just because someone else has gone tits up, you know? There's a skate holder in the boat my road that holds about 50 people. They can hold that show, no problem. But yeah, there's thousands of venues that would be able to take this show on short notice. Somewhere in Europe would be a fantastic sort of counterpoint to having cancelled the Saudi Arabia show. You've got to think Saudi Arabia's a part in this as well. Surely they must be thinking this is not worth the hassle it's going to generate at the moment. Let them call it off for time being, postpone it. Let them spin the excuse out that we're investigating what's going on, and as such, we don't think it'd be wise to have the spotlight shone on another company while we are being dragged over the coals, something like that. But is it just me, or does that seem like the common sense solution to it all, that you have the Saudi Arabian side of it cancel things?
No, it makes total sense. It is complete common sense here. But once again, you know, as we've talked about this before, you know, as we've heard in wrestling podcasts, you're trying to inject logic into an illogical situation, Tony. And how many times on our previous show had you and I used that phrase? About a million. So, no, I'm with you. If Saudi Arabia really wanted to, I don't know if using wrestling terms here, save face, if they would say, hey, you know what, at this time, unfortunately, due to the circumstances surrounding the disappearance of the journalist, I think it's in our best interest right now to put all of our attention, our focus on trying to solve this and bring the culprits to justice and go ahead and help the family with the closure process. I think that would be the best thing to do. Now, are they going to do that?
No.
Of course they're not going to do that, because it was, so far we've never heard anything that has talked about changing the show. We haven't. And the other thing from WWE, we still haven't heard them say anything about canceling the show. Yeah, we've heard the message that's come out from their corporate Twitter account that says we're monitoring the situation, and now we're seeing where, okay, you know, ticket sales have been suspended. But I would like to know what type of conversations have happened between the Prince and Vince McMahon regarding this. Do you think it's one of those just very cut and dry conversations that Vince has, blunt force trauma? Or do you think, whoa, wait a minute, these guys want to pay us a lot of money. I'm going to ask questions that he can probably have a good answer to that I can then relay. So guess what? Deflect, deflect, deflect.
I would doubt Vince has ever personally spoken to anyone from Saudi Arabia. He's too busy dancing with Carmella and Artis these days.
He does definitely have some fancy feet recently. So I will agree with you on that. Maybe he's so old and senile that he doesn't even realize what's happening.
I think if you want sort of Vince's view on things, you want to look at what JBL on Fox Business said when he did that interview. That seemed to be a very sort of, you wouldn't have been surprised if JBL had the earpiece in and Vince was sat backstage feeding him what to say line for line. Yeah, you want to change the world, you said the WWE, well, yeah, that's right, let's stop human killing each other, let's stop hatred by sending Roman Reigns to lose to Brock Lesnar again, because that's what people want to see.
Because that totally answers every question and makes everyone go home feeling nice, warm, and fuzzy,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Apparently the Berlin Wall fell after Hulk Hogan picked it up and slammed it.
Okay. Well, guys, I don't really know what the final solution of all of this is going to be. But so we talked about it from the Saudi Arabia perspective. We talked about that. We did talk about if they did want to go ahead, meaning WWE, and go ahead and move the venue. And I agree with you 100%. I don't think it is fair to the UK to be like, oh, okay, so you're option number two. You know, the girl I wanted to ask to go to prom said no, but you know what? I'll ask you now. That's not right. That is not okay, but it's a business. And I'm sure that, you know, the UK would graciously accept this and go ahead and put on a fantastic show. But let me ask you this question. Let's say WWE does say, you know what, ticket sales are officially going to go back on sale. We are going to go ahead and move forward with the show. What do you think happens going forward here? I mean, we've already heard the fallout from a lot of people in Washington, you know, senators and governors who are saying this is not okay. What happens then? Or do you think Vince doesn't really care what you think?
This is the big question for me, because Vince's wife was part of Trump's government. There's a direct connection there. Surely there has to be some advice from above or some communication to above or vice versa. I just don't understand how this is still rumbling on. Someone should have said, this is what we're going to do. This is the company line. Everyone's going to stand by this. What I'm kind of feeling sorry for here is the talent. You know, the guys that are on the roster that are going to wrestle there or going to travel there. Some of them might have as objections as much as we do, but they will still do what they're told, because you know what this world's like. Like you said, money might not make the world go round, but it's important. You want to keep a job. You want to keep a good job. So it's those guys and girls, well, not the girls, because obviously they're not invited at the moment. That's who I feel sorry for in all of this.
Yeah, no, I'm with you as well. I mean, mean, I don't know how you can perceive yourself to be progressive or how you can see yourself to be, you know, on the trend with the way the world is moving, but yet you still have this outlook on women. That in itself, let's first handle the equality situation first. Let's first do that. Let's finally go ahead and put that to rest. Women are just as qualified as men. There is no issue with that whatsoever. They are just as talented. And Tony, you and I have talked about this, and Dara and me and James Trupenny have talked about this. There are a lot of women that are far better wrestlers than most of the men. So at the end of the day, if it's really about the product, if it's really about what you're wanting to do is put on a great show, then you do need the women as well. They have a great, great complementary style to what the men do. So yeah, progressive, that's a load of crap in my opinion. But yeah, this thing is going to sour if we see the show stay booked.
Now, see what you're saying about bringing the women on the show. Now, see, that is somewhere where I could definitely see the WWE having an effect on change, eventually bringing over the women wrestlers. There was one of the shows they did in the Middle East, or whatever, I cannot remember which country it was for the life of me. I'm sure it was Sasha Banks, like, to bless wrestle the match for the first time. Okay, they had to change their attire and be covered like bodysuits, but there was still a first ever women's match in this country. That's where WWE can affect change, and that's where they should be helping to affect change. But we're all getting worked up over this journalist. You know, no offence to that one man and his poor family, but there's much bigger atrocities been going on in Saudi Arabia over many years that people seem to be turning a blind eye on. But this must be the straw that's broken the camel's back. And if this does eventually affect change, then this might be the turning point.
Well, and let's hope that it is. And, you know, a lot of times we've seen in life that from a tragedy, progress does occur because, you know, enough people look at a situation. If it garners enough eyeballs, people look at it and say, well, wait a minute, this is it. This is the bottom. It is bottomed out. We need to change now. So hopefully that from this situation, good does come out of it. But as far as I'm concerned, WWE, it's a lose-lose situation, and you put yourself in this. Once again, you got to be careful who you get in business with. And I know a lot of people are going to say, well, you know what? That's easy to armchair quarterback that. That's easy for you to go ahead and look at a situation, you know, after it's already happened. That's fine. But at the end of the day, we kind of know the way this works. I don't know. Not everyone's morals and values line up with each other. And if it doesn't, then why would you think your business would be the same way? All right, guys, that is going to do it for episode one of Freelance Wrestling Rewind. Let me ask you this question. Is there anything else that you've seen, you've noticed that you would like to kind of dabble in or mention before we go ahead and say our farewells?
Well, no, like I said, the thing I've enjoyed most this week was seeing that PBW show in a community center. So I've made this point to a lot of people this week. Wrestling isn't just about the big super shows, the New Japan shows, the WWE shows, the Impact Wrestling shows, the PWG shows. It's about going out at a grassroots level. If you see a local wrestling promotion, get out, go and see the show. You never know who you're going to see there. You could see the next big thing. You could see someone that's been there, done that, and just wanted to get back. You see kids learning the trade. You see families having fun. I mean, the highlight for that show for me, it wasn't even anything I saw in the ring. It was just the way the kids were screaming at the wrestlers, and in one case, quite foul-mouthed kids for six and seven-year-olds, and leading to very mortified-looking mothers. But I was stood there absolutely howling, laughing. But yeah, just get out, go and see some wrestling. Let all this backstage controversy and politics, just ignore that. Go and see a wrestling match and just remember why you fell in love with watching it to begin with.
And guys, we do want to let you know before we go ahead and say our farewells, please make sure you go ahead and follow the Trupenny Show on Twitter. That is at TRUEPENN. Y-S-H-O-W, all one word. You should also go ahead and follow the Trupenny Show on Facebook. And please support the Trupenny Show on Patreon, where you can keep all of their shows free forever for everyone. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I am Mike Freeland for my co-host, Tony Cottam. We didn't get to talk about the weather this week, so tell me, what's it look like outside your window?
We have a world, especially for it here in Scotland. It's dreich. It's grey. It's dull. It's threatening terrain. It's cold. It's just awful. But that's pretty much par for the course where I live. So,
but I will tell you this, though. Tony Cottam is a wonderful follow on Twitter. Guys, I am telling you, not only for his wrestling acumen, but for his unbelievable photography. Man is talented. Tony, first tell us, where can people find you on social media?
Right. Well, you can find me personally on social media. Usually I'm some variation of NO, but on Twitter, which is the main one, you can find me at underscore NO. That's INNO. If you like my nonsense and how well I've managed to stop myself from swearing, check out my own little podcast that I have over at We Are Smashcast. You can find us on Twitter at We Are Smashcast. We do a show once a week. It's me and three of my friends, and there's no restraints on language or swearing. And yeah, if you want to learn some quality Scottish insults, that's the place to go.
And I also have some exciting news to tell you. If you are digging this show as well. I am the host of another show that is just being launched. If you are a big fan of all things ECW, Mikey Whipwreck and Jerry Lynn. That's right, Mikey Whipwreck and Jerry Lynn. And myself will be going through the history of what was ECW, the good, the bad, the ugly, the road stories, the backstage politics, and everything else. You can follow all the information on that show launching. You can follow me. I am at Mike Freeland, M-I-K-E-F-R-E-L-A-N-D. You can follow Mikey Whipwreck at Mikey Whipwreck, then an underscore. And you can follow Jerry Lynn at It's Jerry Lynn. Guys, thank you so much. Once again, don't forget the True Penny Show. Go ahead and download the current episode. For Tony Cotta, I'm Mike Freeland. We'll catch you next week on Freeland's Wrestling Rewind.